Thank you very much for this opportunity. As I understand my brief, it's to provide some context for this project. And in doing so, I want to sort of highlight some of the broader systemic issues that I think might be relevant for consideration in a project of this nature. And some of these issues, I think, are contained in Sven's formative paper, but I think they are probably worth repeating, and that is exactly what I'm going to do as my point of departure. And my point of departure is the National Intelligence Council's Global Trends 2015. So let me make some quick reference to what I think are important trends that emerge from the NIC study. The first is the demographic phenomenon, and that is that the world's population in 2015 will be 7.2 billion, up from 6.1 billion, and 95% of that increase will take place in developing countries. The second is natural resources and the environment, namely that overall food production will be inadequate to feed this growing population, and I think we already confront the specter of this Malthusian dilemma as I speak, problem compounded by poor infrastructure and distribution, political instability, and chronic poverty. The third area is the global economy and globalization, namely the rapid and largely unrestricted flow of information, ideas, cultural values, capital and goods, and people, which are a net contributor to the global economy. However, its evolution is extremely rocky in the sense that it will be marked by recurring financial volatility and widening economic divides. The next is national, the tension between national and global governance, namely that states will continue to be the dominant players on the global stage but will have far less control over flows of information technology, disease, migrants, arms, and financial transactions, whether those be legal or illegal. So that, simply to say, that collective issues are becoming much more extensive and intensive, but the means for addressing them are extremely weak and incomplete because of the fractured and fragmented nature of global governance and management. And there are three issues that highlight the urgency of reframing global governance, challenges for collective action. The first is that little, if any, progress has been made in creating a sustainable framework for global warming. The second is that little progress has been made in achieving the benchmarks of the MDGs. If anything, the targets will be missed by a very wide margin. And thirdly, the threat of nuclear catastrophe. Now that might have diminished, but it still hovers on the horizon. So, in a sense, I guess I'm saying that the post-Cold War multilateral order is threatened by the intersection of three types of crises: humanitarian, economic, and environmental. And there are inexorable forces pushing them from bad to worse in a emerging system characterized by structural global vulnerability. And the sources of this are multiple, of course, and cross-cutting. Borders are ill-defined, and people within borders are either at war with each other or are victims of communal and sectarian violence. There are conflicts and civil wars that persist, especially in a region such as Africa. We still face the prospect of weapons proliferation. There are deficient energy and water supplies, rogue states, transnational problems, including drugs, and the flow of illicit arms, and we still face the pandemic scourge of HIV/AIDS. So, in short, what is it about globalization that is distinct? I think it is this fact, that while global capitalism has reshaped markets, including how they are managed and for its benefit, globalization has, if anything, deepened and widened the structural global vulnerability that I refer to, and indeed has led to further impoverishment of large swaths of people across countries and regions. I think it's also important to consider in this context the economic packages of the Washington Consensus, as well as was Washington's security agenda, connected to specific forms of globalization, I would argue. Essentially, the Washington Economic Consensus and its variants, they promulgate the view that a positive role for government is to be fundamentally distrusted in the core areas of socio-economic life. So the thrust of this consensus is to enhance economic liberalization and to adapt the public domain, whether local, national, or global, to market-leading institutions and processes. So in my view, the Washington Consensus, at its variance, bear a heavy burden of responsibility in significant areas of market failure, including the problem of externalities as this relates to environmental degradation, inadequate development of non-market social factors which are essential for providing public goods such as education, health, infrastructure, and so on. So this brings me then to the state of the systemic order and the problems with leading institutions and organizations that underpin the multilateral systemic order. And let me just make a few remarks in this regard. The first is that the value of the UN system has been called into question, and the legitimacy of the Security Council has been questioned amidst growing choruses for its reform, especially from the quarters of developing countries. This really points to the marginalization and the susceptibility of the United Nations to the agendas of the most powerful states, especially that of the United States. The second is that the future of the European Union is highly uncertain, in my view. I think there's a very deep sense of unease in Brussels about what will happen over the next decade or two. The EU is very anxious about the increasing success of low-cost economies, including China, India, and Brazil, and about whether the European social model can survive in its present form, especially in view of an aging population and a changing demography. Among European voters, as we know, most recently in Ireland, there's also an increasing skepticism about European Union integration and extension. Europe seems either unable or unwilling to provide or project its soft power as an alternative to the United States' hard power, and its capacity to provide more active global leadership, I think, is singularly lacking. The WTO faces its own existential dilemma because of the de facto collapse of the Doha Round. Whether this can be revived this year is still open to question. The G8 seems less capable of delivering on its pledges, especially with regard to aid, trade, and debt relief, and in trying to craft a new international financial architecture. The roles of the IMF and the World Bank are increasingly coming under greater scrutiny and the pressures for their reform and restructuring. So, in short, the post-Cold War multilateral order is clearly facing challenging times, and I would hope that this project will take these considerations on board. And of course, we cannot forget the changed context, the security context, defined by United States' rush to war in Iraq in 2003. I think that has given rise to a very narrow security agenda, a security agenda which, in my view, is essentially hostile to the essential tenets, norms, and practices that have been developed to promote international cooperation since 1945. So we live in a rather uncertain world, I would say, where the dreams of a new world order, the promise of that new world order that was supposed to inaugurate a new kind of international relations after the end of the Cold War, I think are increasingly being relegated to the domain of fantasy. But as Isaiah Berlin once remarked, to know the worst is not always to be liberated from its consequences. Nevertheless, it is preferable to ignorance. Thank you.